Smokey. Roll them. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hanlum, joined by...
And I'm Jordan, and I'm declaring right off the bat, we are not going to be racist at all this episode. No. We're not doing it. No stereotyping, no accent jokes, or at least no Mexican accent jokes. I'll probably do an Australian accent because that's kind of my thing. But... we are not going to be racist at all this episode.
Which, that would be an odd thing to come into this episode thinking, oh man, what sort of racist shenanigans are these two going to do? We're not going to do any racist shenanigans.
It's a racist character, though. And so we have to be careful on how we're interpreting said racist character.
Right.
But this is still going to be a lighthearted episode.
We're doing Speedy Gonzales.
Oh yeah, the time has come.
Yes,
we're doing Speedy Gonzales.
We've prolonged it long enough. Speedy is one of those characters that we could have done in the first 10 episodes or so, just those separate character pieces, but we didn't want to.
Because a lot like the Hippity Hopper character. The shorts of Speedy Gonzales are relatively one note. Mm-hmm. They're rather repetitive. Yeah. And it's not like, oh, well, if we do everyone spin on Speedy Gonzales, maybe he'll be good. No, because we saw the Wild Chase. We saw what happens when they take a Speedy Gonzales short. And yeah.
Not good. But the funny thing is that we've spoken about Sylvester in the past, and we've said that Sylvester is an excellent foil character for a lot of different characters. He can work as a foil for Homer Fudd, as a foil for Tweety Bird, as a foil for so many different people. And like Hippity Hopper, with Speedy Gonzales, Sylvester has to do a lot more work than usual because Speedy Gonzales' character is very nominal. Like, there's not much to Speedy as a character. He is the fastest mouse in all of Mexico. He is unstoppable and unable to be caught. And he's kind of obnoxious, and that's it. It's more than we got from Hippity Hopper, but it's not much.
Yeah. So the three shorts we'll be covering today is the self-titled Speedy Gonzales, the Pied Piper of Guadalupe, mm-hmm. and It's Nice to Have a Mouse Around the House.
Yeah. And it's very funny because a lot of these... characters are like, okay, there's a one shot in like the late 40s or the early 40s or something, and it sort of persists for another couple 20 years, like Foghorn Langhorne. Speedy Gonzales comes about towards the end of the golden age of Looney Tunes. And, you know, it's his real wingspan there is only from like 1955 until the end of the full Warner Brothers reign over the company, which is probably why Friz Freleng sees so much promise in him to have him as one of the flagship characters of his era of producing with Dave DePatie. So it's an intriguing, interesting sort of time lapse for this character. And it's going to be very difficult to really get a lot of stuff that's aged well from it. But we will be a little fair. And a little, you know, we're not going to be racist, but we're going to be fair. So, that being said, we should get into the first of our shorts. So, like a bat out of hell, like a full bomb onto the radar in 1955. Well, actually, that's not true. Because I was going to say that Speedy Gonzales came out of nowhere. There was an inkling of him coming up because Cat Tales for Two still exists.
Yep.
Which we've covered, correct?
Yes, we did.
In our McKimson episode.
Indeed.
And it's very funny because while this starts out as a Robert McKimson, you know, creation, it does get taken over by Friz Freleng. And it becomes a Freleng character for the rest of his run, pretty much. Though I think, does McKimson do any like Golden Age era Speedy cartoons after this first Speedy Gonzales cartoon? Or is it just Freleng?
I believe it's just Freleng, because McKimson's later character was Hippity Hopper.
Right. Okay. That's very fair. Okay. But yeah, like there was like, you know, it's not like Speedy comes out of nowhere. He's sort of melded into a slightly less racist character from what he was in Cat Tales for Cool. Although the word slightly is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in that sentence. He is still very racist. He is still speaks with a Mexican accent and is very obnoxious and goes Epa Arriba and shit. But he doesn't have a gold tooth, and he doesn't look as dingy as OG Speedy looked.
He doesn't look completely like a racist caricature of a Mexican person.
But he looks a little like one.
A little.
And it's enough to make this hard to talk about. Okay, but Speedy Gonzales, which is the name of his debut cartoon, you know, because it's a one-shot and they want to just make it an easy name, or at least it was a one-shot to that point, was released on September 17th, 1955. This has a really cool Born on This Day one, Mark.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh. Charles Martinet was born on this day.
Charles Martinet.
You don't know who that is, do you?
I think I do.
Okay, then what's the character he's most well known for voicing?
Mario.
Yes, thank you. Okay, good. I was worried for a moment. Charles Martinet, one of the premier voice actors of the early to, you know, current Nintendo canon, is born on this day, September 17th, 1955. As someone who has played his fair share of Mario games, I am very happy about this.
He does a very good job.
Oh, he does a great job.
I mean, I'll say this. There's a reason, because, like, you know, the competitor, Sega, Sonic, is that Sonic's had a few voice actors, but everyone agrees that Roger Craig Smith is the definitive Sonic. And
exactly.
They brought him back, like, very recently as a recording. They brought him back to do more Sonic, because he's that beloved. It's a tie between him and Urkel.
Well, or Urkel was more of the, you know, the animated series one that they focused on. But Roger Craig Smith, I think, was the best one.
Yeah.
But Charles Martinet has been pretty much one of the only Mario VAs of the last 30 to 40 years, and he's done an excellent job of it. Also on this day, a sports-related statistic to confuse Mark. On this day, Brooks Robinson makes his major league debut for the Baltimore Orioles and goes 2-for-4 with a couple of hits. Brooks Robinson, for any non-baseball fans, or for any baseball fans who don't know who Brooks Robinson is, was one of the longest-tenured position players in major league history. He was basically like playing almost every day at third base for 23 years in Baltimore. He played for one team, played one position every day almost from 1955 until 1977. That is a show of complete consistency that doesn't come across very often at all. He is a Baseball Hall of Famer, and this was his MLB debut, so that's pretty cool.
Lovely.
Yeah. Again, it's cool for me, but I don't know if it'll be cool for others. I don't know what the Venn diagram of our listeners who also are big into sports are.
Yeah, I don't have access to those analytics.
Okay. Speedy Gonzales, the cartoon, is a Friz Freleng film with a Warren Foster script and voice acting by Mel Blanc and Stan Freberg. This film wins the Best Animated Short Award at the Oscars in 1956, beating, and this is just the other nominees that year, Goodwill Toward Man, which is a Hanna-Barbera early work from Metro Golden Mayer, which is a remake of a Hugh Harmon film from earlier called Peace on Earth, as well as a Donald Duck cartoon called No Hunting, and a Tex Avery Chili Willy cartoon called The Legend of Rockabye Point. So, fierce competition. A lot of animation heavy hitters there, but, you know, Speedy Gonzales wins. Which is odd.
Yeah. Very odd.
And they'd be, and Speedy as a character would be up for it the following year as well with Tabasco Road. Actually, no, it wouldn't be the following year. It'd be 57 with Tabasco Road, but would lose to Birds Anonymous.
Which is fair. That's
which is very fair, because Birds Anonymous is an excellent cartoon. And if you want to hear us talk about it, we talked about it a while ago on our first Freeling episode. Yes. So. At least I think it was our first Freeling episode. It might have been the Tweety episode. I don't fucking know. We've done a million of these, but this is our 49th episode.
Whoa.
We've done 49 of these. We are almost at number 50.
That's insane.
And that's crazy. We've been doing this, and as we record this, we've been basically doing this for a year.
Yeah.
This will come out in like June, but we started recording May of 2020, and we were doing this at the end of May in 2020. So we've been recording this for a year. We've hit 50 episodes. It is crazy. So
yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. The setup to Speedy Gonzales is actually, dare I say it, progressive. A group of mice at the border look to cross the border in order to get to the Ajax Cheese Company on the other side. But the Ajax people have employed a cat to keep the Mexican immigrants in their place. This is a decent immigration story. There is no real food or industry where the mice are, and the opportunity to eat is in America. But unlike in other mouse-related immigration stories, there are cats in America. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
I was prepared to do another crickets joke, but you got it eventually. So, okay, but this is our setup, and it's actually kind of good. But sadly, as decent as this setup is, Mel Blanc and Stan Freberg's vocal characterizations for some of these Mexican mice are quite racist, as it's just two white guys doing stereotypical voices.
Yeah, this is literally just them doing their normal cartoon voices, but adding stereotypical Mexican dialect to them. It's very...
Yeah. And the funny thing is that in this era of Warner Brothers animation, they did have some Mexican heritage-ish... They did have some people that were, you know, Mexican, either born or raised. They had Bill Melendez. That's pretty Mexican. They had other people that were sort of like that. But they didn't think to cast, you know, to scale in that. And so it comes off as very problematic in that sense, which sucks. And we haven't even gotten to Speedy's voice yet. But the opening conceit is that, you know, in order to figure out how to get over the border to the cheese factory, the mice draw straws, and whoever gets the shortest one is this meek little mouse named Manuel, and he has to go first. But what works with this initial gag is that we don't even see Sylvester eat Manuel. We see the excited reactions from the mice turn worried and then, you know, gallows. And then we just see him chuck his hat into a pile of similar hats, showing how difficult it has been to pass through, showing the stakes, and giving us a very dark beat to start off with.
People can die in this cartoon.
Yes. And it's not like Speedy runs into Sylvester's mouth and grabs Manuel later anyway, although he could have. He very well could have.
Maybe Speedy
He
just
decides to
him.
Keep him there because he doesn't know Manuel's in there. Okay, good. So it makes sense plot-wise. So here is where the mice decide that they need to go and get Speedy Gonzales, known by reputation as the fastest mouse in all of Mexico. And here we have a joke that hasn't aged well, where the main mouse goes, "Oh yeah, we should get Speedy. It's easy to get him. I'll get him. He's a friend of my sister." To which another mouse replies, "Oh well, Speedy's a friend of everyone's sister." Which
he sleeps around.
That is dirty.
Yeah,
that is a stereotype about how Mexicans sleep around a lot, which is not like. I haven't met many Mexicans. I can't confirm or deny whether or not this is true. But this made it into an Oscar-winning short. This really racist stereotype joke made it in here. And again, we haven't even gotten to Speedy yet. And we're about to. Because it's a very easy
joke.
And
this is something I didn't like, because I was interested in Speedy. There's a sign that says, you know, $25, like 25 pesos, you can shoot him, you get a big prize, except the spelling is B-E-E-G.
Yeah.
So the text is also racist, which is a bit much.
Words are racist. Letters are racist.
Come on.
Can you imagine if that was a version of Sesame Street? This episode of Sesame Street is brought to you by the letter R, who hates you. This episode is brought to you by the letter N. For no... I'm not even going to finish that.
This episode of Sesame Street brought to you by the letter F. Also, the grouch pops out of the trash can. And you!
I'm going to name all of the nationalities that belong in this can. Remember, we're not being racist this episode.
Oh, no.
We're not being racist this episode. No.
No.
Nuh-uh. Strictly making fun of whites. Nothing else.
Nothing more.
So anyway, we meet Speedy at a firing range as he's sort of dodging all of the bullets that people fire at him, which is clever. And to be very fair, Mel Blanc's characterization for Speedy is strong and uses a lot of the different parts of his voice. It's not like a pussyfooted around sort of characterization. He's putting his all into Speedy. However, it is still very racist. And it is very much him doing a stereotypical Mexican accent and being very obnoxious because that's what he and the writers think that Mexican people can be. The angle here of Speedy being a national hero who comes back to help his old boys take down the cat is an interesting one because, you know, it's something that could be translated to human activity about, you know, the sort of the local boy coming home from the war to sort of take somebody down, or just like a local hero or like a cowboy coming in to take down the bad guys.
Right.
And only it's a mouse, it's a Mexican mouse.
Right.
And here is where we get the hook of the piece, which is Speedy continuously being able to get through Sylvester and get cheese for people, which is the whole rest of this cartoon.
Also, we should get used to this animation of Speedy running off, as we're going to see it 5-6 more times at least.
Oh, yeah.
Oscar-winning short. And they're going to use the same shot of Speedy getting ready to run like 5-6 times.
And the gags here go from simple to sort of simple to slightly more complex. All of these are pretty simple gags with simple payoffs. But because Speedy isn't a very complex character and because all of his sort of, you know, going out have the same outcome where, you know, he runs and he always makes it.
Yeah.
Then there's not a lot of variance you can really do with these gags. Like, okay. Sylvester catches Speedy in a net. Speedy drags Sylvester along past cacti and through pipes. So the thing that can be varied is what happens to Sylvester, which is good. I mean, bad things happening to Sylvester is funny. But when it's the only thing that's being changed, it's not as funny.
Right.
Also, Sylvester doesn't talk in much at all in this cartoon. Like, he has some yelps later on, and he has some dialogue very, very late in it. But for the majority of this cartoon, he acts as sort of like a Wile E. Coyote-esque unfortunate pursuer, trying gags, seeing them all fail. Like, with this mousetrap gag, because we've seen Roadrunner Coyote cartoons, we know what's coming.
Right.
Speedy doesn't set any off. They all go flying. Sylvester catches them all. And there are some good Mel Blanc yelps, which we wouldn't get with Wile E. Coyote. But it's funnier when the person who can continuously speed through everything doesn't have that much of an attitude on them. The Roadrunner is funny because, A, it is like, yes, they're very fast, but also there is something simple about this character that isn't obnoxious, but like there's a little like tongue sticking out or like just watching in awe without changing the facial expression or hearing any words. Speedy saying more and being more obnoxious doesn't help him any.
No.
If that makes any sense.
No, it really doesn't. He just kind of, you know, he certainly does. He's never in peril.
No.
Ever. And like,
never.
There are ways to do a fast character in peril.
Roadrunner.
Exactly. Like Roadrunner. Or I'm pretty sure in Tabasco Road there's a gag involving glue. You know, like stuff like that. Like yeah. Limo's peril. There's none of that in here. Like the short's no. called Speak. No, I'll get more to it in my final thoughts. But,
yeah. Okay. I mean, like, jumping off of that, the very next gag, which is a baseball one, doesn't make sense to me. Sylvester gets a mitt to catch Speedy, like, you know, a catcher's mitt. And because he hears, you know, zooming. And he catches something and ends up being a baseball. Which already doesn't make sense because how come we hear Ipa 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 Al Ariba or whatever and it just ends up being a baseball when we know it's Speedy. So then Sylvester throws it all the way into the warehouse, which Sylvester just has a rocket arm on him? Like the Orioles should have brought him up. And why throw it into the warehouse if it's just a baseball? Why not just discard it? A lot happened to happen for this gag to work and Speedy in the baseball to get around, steal cheese, and come back.
Yeah, it's honestly the only gag that's different than the others. Because at least there's some sort of attempt to subvert. But that's it. That's the only real subversion we get.
Yeah.
Because this cartoon it's literally two gags. It's Speedy, he's really fast, goes to the cheese factory, then returns back to the mice, or it's a character is waiting for Speedy, comes up, yells, and that startles the bad guy, and that's where we get our comedy. Those are the only gags in this one and in the other ones. So.
Yeah, and we get one of those somebody scares Speedy, or somebody scares, you know, Sylvester or whatever, immediately next with this landmine cat.
Which, where does Sylvester find the
payoff?
Where does Sylvester find the time to plan landmines? Because he plans a lot of them.
Or where does he even find landmines? It's not like Wile E. Coyote with his Acme catalog. Sylvester had to, like, really search them out. And, you know, oh yeah, I'm giving landmines to a house cat, sure, whatever. But As miffed as I am about that gag being so simple about just scaring him into the minefield, the timing of the payoff works because Sylvester knows he needs to be careful in this minefield and he's just being very careful. And then the second he steps off, he sets one off.
Yeah.
That got me. And next is a gag that's more bizarre than funny, where literally Sylvester sets himself up to literally catch Speedy in his mouth, but Speedy literally speeds through his mouth and out his tail and into the factory. Like,
well, you know, Jordan, I mean,
as he's
he is a Mexican mouse, so it just went right through him.
We're not being racist.
Food.
Saying Mexican food can occasionally cause you to go to the bathroom is not a racist thing.
Taco Bell.
But it could potentially register.
We enjoy it.
Oh, man. Oh, my God, yeah.
Mexican food's great.
But yeah, no, we love Mexican food. But we're not insulting it. We're just saying that can happen when there's a lot of, you know, spices in something anyway. But the weird part for me, the bizarre part, is after Speedy gets out with some cheese, he realizes he has to go through the same way he went in.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes back through Sylvester's tail and out his mouth.
You know what?
I think it's...
You know what this reminds me of?
What?
A certain Jim Carrey film.
The monkey out of his ass in Bruce Almighty?
Yes.
Well, that's a great gag. But I think it's very convenient that in this, by the cartoon's logic, going through the tail can get Speedy back through Sylvester's mouth and not going through the asshole. It's just odd to me.
Well, hopefully one day they'll release a Looney Tunes version of Operation with Sylvester the Cat so we can really know the anatomy of Sylvester.
Yeah. Release the butthole cut of, Speedy Gonzales.
No.
Not that kind of cat. And then with this final gag where Speedy's like, okay, I'm going to get all the cheese. And then Sylvester just gets all of the cheese from the factory out and tries to blow it up. I don't see his thought process. It's not going to incinerate all of the cheese. Obviously, bits of it are going to fall from the sky after the explosion. And they're still going to get some of the cheese.
Yeah.
What were you expecting, Sylvester? I do love his pole-banging reaction to this. But it...
So that's where that gift came from.
Yeah.
I legitimately had a Leonardo DiCaprio pointing moment like, oh, that's where it came from. That's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. And then we fade out after Sylvester has another catchphrase spawning line to the camera and we're out of there. So I'll say this. There's decent gag work in this cartoon.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple of good gags that work. But, and also I like the setup. I like the sort of story with the sort of the Mexican mice before Speedy shows up. But it went into too familiar of a groove for me. Mm-hmm. And also there's not much to Speedy Gonzales as a character other than being good at things and being racist. So once it really got into the sameness of a lot of the structure of this cartoon, it turned me off more and more. And this cartoon works more than I'd like to admit, but it also doesn't work quite a bit.
Yeah, pretty much.
So,
It's for a self-titled Speedy Gonzales short, it definitely tells you all you need to know about the character. And the problem is that is pretty much every Speedy Gonzales short. You know? So,
yeah.
It's there to serve its purpose. Besides that, it doesn't... Oscar winning. What about this feels Oscar winning worthy? The animation's fine. You know, the characters are there. Yeah. The gag works decent. Like, what makes it Academy Award winning worthy?
Once again, you have to remember that most Oscar voters are white.
Oh.
And this was 1955.
Geez, yeah.
You know, in 2 years, there would be, I think in one, I have to do the math, but I think within 2 years, there would be a Mexican character in an Oscar-winning film. But it would be Cantinflas as Passepartout in Around the World in 80 Days. In a very primitive part for a minority.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of his parts in the U.S. would be. Very primitive, very early Mexican stereotype-ish kind of roles. Because that's what was available for people in that era. And yeah, this was definitely a very early time for Mexican representation or Mexican characters on film. And they saw this as a funny, impressive cartoon and not as a racist thing because it was 1955.
Right. So I'm giving this a 3 out of 5 animals.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm giving it. It's fine in some parts, not so good in others. It's fine.
Now the next short, The Pied Piper of Guadalupe, came out on August 19th, 1961. So about a couple of years after the first Speedy Gonzales cartoon. In terms of what happened on that day, U.S. Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson visits West Berlin. This was directed by Fritz Freleng and Holly Pratt and written by, John Dunn.
Yes, John Dunn.
Yes, in fact...
Damn you, John Dunn.
In fact, this is how John Dunn enters the Looney Tunes story. Because this was his very first Looney Tunes cartoon written by him.
Ah.
And, of course, he would go on to write a lot of the 60s Looney Tunes material and, of course, helped conduct the story for Daffy Duck's Fantastic Island.
Yeah, this is, you know, a favor for a friend or whatever. Yes.
All right, so this...
John Dunn.
So...
We've,
This short wasn't nominated for Best Animated Short in 1961. Okay.
What was with these people and Speedy Gonzales cartoons?
What is going on? That's odd. So, wait.
Three. I counted three.
Warner Brothers released, like, there's a DVD of, like, all their Academy Award nominated, like, shorts.
There's three Speedy Gonzales cartoons on it.
Look at this. Let's see. Okay, Speedy Gonzales. Let's go road.
Two.
Okay.
Two.
Okay, so two on that one. Okay, so they only put two on this collection.
This was the one they didn't.
But yeah, the Academy just loved Speedy Gonzales. You racist bastards.
Fine.
Okay. But in terms of what was nominated that year, JoJo's had two shorts nominated, a Beep Prepared, which we did an episode about, and
so, yeah,
and Nelly's Folly. In terms of the Disney company, Aquamania was nominated, and the short that won was Ersatz, which was a film by Zagreb Film, which is, Yes, which is from Yugoslavia. So
okay.
Yugoslavia won that year. Hey. And of course, this short was featured. Well, its opening and ending was featured in a Speedy Gonzales section in 1001 Rabbit Tales.
Yes, it was. That's how I knew it.
As did I. And I think there was a reason. Which we'll get into.
Yeah, because John Dunn wrote it.
Yeah, there's more of it. So, the pun, the title is based off the Pied Piper of Hamelin. So, there's a reference for it. And what's fascinating is that it's 61, so we're still at Warner Brothers. No, we haven't gone to the Patty Freeling era yet. Which,
No, not yet.
But... I don't know. There's some things in here that remind me of them. All right.
Yes.
Okay. So our short begins, and Sylvester is in Mexico, and he's chasing mice. However, he's really bad at it, as he's chasing them around, and the mice are calling him stupid in Spanish, and he's just not having a good day. And he's yelling at them about how, like, look, you're just rats, and of course you can't hurt me. Of course, the rats have a plank of wood, so they hit him on the head with it. And Speedy walks away a little bit, taunts them some more. Their piece of wood goes longer, hits him. He goes all the way out of town and yells at them. And then it turns out that they just have a bunch of boards nailed together. They pull it out and then they hit him. That was nice. Very well done.
I like Mel Blanc's distant audio source in the third one, where you could just tell he's just further away from the mic than he's ever been, and you could just get it picking up.
I still say you're a bunch of rats.
Yes. So Zoster, you know, he's at this bookstore, he's walking around, and he sees a Mexican version of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. And he has an idea. So we transition.
Mark, before you go on, before you go on, before you transition, there's something cracked me up that probably isn't going to crack anybody else up. But at this bookstore, there's just a book in the shop. There's a book in the shop that's just called Oi. H-O-Y, which is Spanish for today.
Oh.
So there's just that yelling at you, just like a random title, just oi. And the idea of that, a book on today, which has been printed many months in advance, so it probably wouldn't be on today. It'd be on 3 months ago.
And
so a very outdated oi.
And now it's even older.
Oi!
Good God, we got it. Okay.
Oi!
Okay, so transition to music. So we transition to music lessons, and it's being done by J.C. Melendez, who actually works at the studio. We talked before. He worked with, he worked at Digi Productions, helped a lot with the Peanuts series. And he's from the Mexican city of Hermosillo, Sonora. So he is.
Yeah, so how he didn't say anything, I have no idea.
So, Sylvester is just learning how to play the flute. And then we transition into right where the 1001 Rabbit Tale section starts, where he's dressed up as the Pied Piper, and he has his, he's getting ready to perform, and the mice are in their mice hole like, oh my god, they're calling him crazy, and just, he's poking in the loco, and, and he starts performing, and it works, because as he's performing, the mice become hypnotized and just walk right over, or dance, I guess, right out of the mouse hole, to which Sylvester collects them in a big vase.
Yeah, I mean, the concept of this is, of the conceit of the conflict is good, because, Sylvester trapping all these mice, and the variations, like the guy dragging the other guy back into the hole, or the one guy who has to tie his tail to a spike, are good variations. And so, like the last one, I think that the setup is good.
Yes. Yeah, so Sylvester thinks he's captured all the mice. And of course, Spider Gonzalez says that there's one more, and it's me. And you better return all my friends, or he'll take them back. Sylvester says, "Okay." Mm-hmm. Go ahead. He uncorks the jug, and of course, being so fast, he goes in, gets someone, takes it back into the rabbit hole. So Sylvester's like, okay, I'll play the music again. He plays the music, and for some reason that is not given to us, Speedy isn't entranced by the music.
Yeah, because he has to be good at everything.
Exactly. God damn Mickey Sue. Anyways, so... So, of course, he's dancing, and of course, Sylvester has a mallet. He hits down onto Speedy. Of course, Speedy has a tiny mallet that hits Sylvester, because, of course, Speedy has a tiny mallet at the ready.
I love the timing of that gag. At least we're still kind of in Golden Age WB era, so we can have good gag work like that.
And I believe, because then they chase off. I believe in 1001 Rabbit Tales, they animated a bit of the vase breaking and all the mice going back to the mouse hole in order to tie that loose end up.
Yeah.
Which.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we get gags that were not in 1001 Rabbit Tales. These are gags I haven't seen either before or rarely ever. So, Sylvester is in a barrel. And next to him is a crate of dried chili peppers. Ooh, that's my favorite Los Angeles rock band.
Are they, though? Because I don't really like them.
I love their song about California.
Which one?
Exactly. No, I kid, but like...
We get it. You don't get rain often. Now shut up. I apologize for anyone currently living in California.
Where was I? Oh, yes. the barrel gag that makes no damn sense.
No, it doesn't
so
make any sense.
So, what was the plan here? So, okay, so Sylvester waits in a barrel, lights up a stick of dynamite when he hears Speedy coming. What was his plan? Well, did have the dynamite be in the way when Speedy runs on by? It...
I mean, at least it's not a pineapple.
No, but it makes no gaggly logical sense.
Blame John Dunn.
Yeah, sure enough. So because he's in this barrel, he gets knocked over, goes down some steps, we see a dog.
Yeah.
So the barrel lands on the dog, the dynamite explodes, and then the dog chases Sylvester. Sure.
Just doesn't work as well.
Doesn't. So Speedy rescues two more mice. Sylvester then has a motorcycle. About a motorcycle somewhere.
Sure.
And he's chasing Speedy and Gonzales on a motorcycle. And they're going and they're going. And they're coming to a cliff. Speedy stops. Sylvester looks at the cliff. His eyes crash through the goggles for some reason.
I liked that. That was good.
I liked it. And then...
It was very Wile E. Coyote-esque.
And then, of course, Sylvester drives off the cliff into the water, in which we stay so long in the water.
Mm-hmm. I didn't understand why we stayed in the
water. I have no idea. And, like, if you're going to do that, maybe have, like, I don't know, maybe, like, the motorcycle revving up underwater, like three times. And then you drive up, but no, it's some weird, like, bubble gag. It makes no damn sense. So, Sylvester tries to drive up the cliff in a maneuver that I've done whenever I'm playing GTA 5. I'm trying to drive a motorcycle up a steep cliff. It never works. It's... Gravity will always be against you. And, Alright. And then he resumes chasing Speedy. Right, of course.
Yeah, it's more of this.
It is. So Speedy then tricks Sylvester into going down a one-way street. And it turns out that he's driven into a bus. Crashed into a bus.
Yeah. Now, what confused me is that this is the last gag before we get to him coming out in a crutch, in like crutches out of the hospital. Right. But I think, considering that we've had him like in a barrel exploding with a dog, him just sort of running into a bus is not the worst sort of injury prone thing that would require a hospital of this cartoon.
Nope. So, again, Sylvester comes out of the hospital. Speedy says, Senor, don't you want your flute back? Don't you want him? And then Sylvester, they didn't change this. Sylvester once again says, no, I don't want him, in a Mexican undertone, which still racist, yes. Sylvester. You're still fucking racist. How dare you? And, you know, Speedy plays the same tune that Sylvester played to the mice as he walks off into the sunset in excruciating pain.
Is that how else do you walk off into the sunset?
Yeah. So, needless to say, they showed the best parts of this short in 1001 Rabbit Tales.
Yes, they did.
The gags that are in here are just fine. Also, I can't quite place it down, but I'm really starting to feel the transition to the Patty Freeling era in this one. You know, especially that water gag. That reminds me of something they would do in a... Again, we're only in 61. So while we're nearing the end of the golden age, we're still in it. But...
Yeah.
This is a shame, really, because I really did like this short sections in the film. And throughout the rest of the short, I thought it would have gags of equal quality, but it just didn't.
But it didn't.
It did not.
Like, the pace was just, like, very, like, robotic, like the last one. A lot of the cartoon sort of chugs rather than challenges things. There are good bits, you know, there's a good setup and some good gags, but there's just not much really that makes this stand on its own.
Yeah, I'm giving this 3 out of 5 anvils.
Yeah, same. It's on par with the original, but still had just as flawed as the original.
Yeah.
So this last one was one that came to my attention. I think I mentioned this last week, but it came to my attention in one of the Jerry Beck coffee table books on the Looney Tunes because it mentioned all different shorts by year, including the characters. And this one had the very intriguing combination of Speedy Gonzales, Daffy Duck, Sylvester the Cat, and Grant. And I'm like, that's got to be interesting. That's a lot of really intriguing characters in one. And I never, like, went after it or saw it until doing prep for this episode. And let's talk about it. This is called It's Nice to Have a Mouse Around the House. This was released on January 16th, 1965. On this day, the last ever airing of The Outer Limits, the original Outer Limits sci-fi show, was on television. Also, the AFL Pro Bowl happens. Before the AFL's merger with the NFL, they had their own sort of Pro Bowl with the teams. And instead of having, you know, North and South divisions, you know, they had an Eastern division and a Western division. And the Western Division won this game with the Broncos' Willie Brown being the MVP. So it would be another couple of years before the AFL would merge with the NFL and become the AFC, but they were still in the makings of some very NFL-esque conventions. Again, I do these sports bits just to confuse Mark.
Hi. Also, on that day, the Searchers' Love Potion number 9 peaked at number 3 on the Billboard charts.
Good shit. Okay. It's nice to have a mouse around the house. Is it a Patty Freeland production? It's directed by Friz and Holly Pratt, like the last one. Story by John Dunn, like the last one. Mel Blanc does the voices, but instead of June Foray as Granny, we have Gigi Pearson voicing that character for the first and only time. This is Granny's last appearance as Sylvester's owner and Speedy's first appearance alongside Daffy Duck. The pieces of the Patty Freeling era are being put into place with this cartoon, suffice to say.
Okay, it's weird. This is the only Friz-directed Daffy Speedy short. I say short because, as we know, he would later direct them for Fantastic Island. Because, it's around this time that McKimson comes back to Speedy. Like, it's weird.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Friz, thanks for giving him Oscar nominations and stuff. Give me him back.
Now it's my turn. Crickets. It's literally the talent show section from SpongeBob where it's SpongeBob sweeping a floor and getting applause and then Squidward putting his head out and getting nothing. And just shoving him out there.
Yes.
It's a great bit. Okay. So first off, how did Speedy get into somebody's house? And why?
Yeah, because this short doesn't take place in... This is the only one that doesn't take place in or around Mexico. It's just a house.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the other ones, you at least have a good enough reason why Speedy is there. In the first one, he's there to bring home the cheese for his, you know, his brothers from home or something, you know, his brethren. And in the second one, he's there to save the lives of all the people trapped by Sylvester. What is Speedy's reason for being in this house. It's not like you're to assume that Speedy is suddenly a trapped in the walls mouse
right.
in somebody's house. Why would he go in there in the first place unless they were really had a lot of cheese?
Uh-huh. By the way, so the title, It's Nice to Have a Mouse Around the House, it's based off of the song, It's So Nice to Have a Man Around the House. Do you know who sung that song?
Neil Diamond?
No.
Who?
It's an old favorite. Like
Dinah Shore?
Yes. Yes.
Dinah oh Shore. My God.
That brings you back.
Sure. Sure, Dinah.
From 1959, It's Nice to Have a Man Around the House.
So that was post-Bongo as well.
Yes. Yes, it was. She still had a career.
Yeah, hopefully she wasn't getting... Hopefully she wasn't slapping anybody either. Yeesh. So that's the question we go into this. Like, you know, Speedy is running around the house being chased by Sylvester. Why would he be in someone's house in the first place? Why would he be in the walls as a house mouse? Why and what? We're not given enough of a reason for it. Which basically just, you know, sums up the entire De Patty Freeling era. Why? Because this is a De Patty Freeling cartoon.
Yeah.
So we meet Gigi Pearson's granny, and Gigi Pearson seems to be doing an impression of June Foray's, and it's not great. It's the same sort of high-pitched kind of voice, and some notes and some tones just don't sound great from this character. She's trying, she really is, but yeah. It's not the best granny.
Sylvester is chasing Speedy and Doss around the house, and
yeah.
They have a pool, and Speedy has run underneath the pool because he has gravity boots on or whatever. And once again, we do the Speedy yells as Sylvester jumps up, is startled, and goes into the pool. A repeated gag. Keep that in mind. We may return to those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Granny has enough of this and calls the Jet Age Pest Control to take care of the mouse. Now,
yeah.
Let's think about this from an audience perspective. Watch this cartoon. You're already thrown off. Why is Granny, Sylvester, and Speedy Gonzales in a short together? That's kind of weird. What's the only other way this could be weirder? Yes. What if Daffy Duck just showed
Daffy.
Up?
Daffy!
What if Daffy Duck just showed the fuck up?
Yeah. And the part that pissed me off, like, okay, Mel's Daffy is still great. Let's make that clear.
Right, right.
His Sylvester is still great. Okay, his Speedy is fine. There's nothing wrong with Mel in this. But once Daffy enters, Granny is like, oh yeah, we're gonna take Sylvester in, or we're gonna take him away to like the vet or somebody or to the doctor because he's clearly had himself. So we're basically about to airlift Sylvester and Granny out of this cartoon, meaning it's just Daffy against Speedy, which means the promise I had for years of Daffy, Speedy, Granny, and Sylvester in the same cartoon. Yes, that's what's happening, but they're not really occupying the same space for very long.
No.
It's a team up in the sense that they're in the same cartoon, but not really in the same shot very often, other than Daffy and Speedy, obviously. So why get rid of that opportunity to have Daffy and Sylvester teaming up to get Speedy? Like, it'd be funny for him to befuddle both of them at once.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since their voice is literally the same. Because you know, Sylvester's just Daffy sped up and then Daffy's whatever he is. So it would have been an easy payday for Mel. Just talking one voice for two of the characters for majority. But also, Sylvester doesn't speak in this.
No. He doesn't. Jesus.
I would say they were cutting corners by using Mel, but you still had the money to hire Mel Blanc to come in and do the voices still, so...
I mean, it's not it's not like Mel was going to say no to doing Sylvester. Mel has said a million times that Sylvester is the easiest voice for him to do because it's just Mel Blanc's voice, just with a little bit of spray at the end of it. Right. So why would it's not like he wouldn't want to do Sylvester. So what makes this needing Daffy to be very vocal, but not needing Sylvester?
Yeah, and also, Tweety has done way worse things to Sylvester than Speedy has. So, like, also, Tweety's not in this. It's a weird one where it's Granny Sylvester and no Tweety. Because we would be... What happened to the bird? Replace the bird with another bird. I don't know. We're still a minute in. We should probably get to the rest of the short.
Well, there's not a lot else to talk about. Okay. There is a good gag where Speedy shouting into Daffy's stethoscope going into the hole and cutting to no Daffy in the shot and him just stuck in the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's the kind of gag work that I wish they did more of in this era. Okay. Then you get a lot of quick gags in this one where Daffy is sort of consulting his book from the company of like different ways to catch a mouse. And, you know, because there's a bit where... Okay, here was something that confused me. Because Daffy entices Speedy out of his hole by getting a nice dinner set up and fresh cheese. And the cheese glides Speedy out of the hole like he's mesmerized. So how come this does this to him, yet the flute music in the last one did nothing for him?
Shit. Yeah.
I found a fucking continuity error with Speedy Gonzales. I did not expect to do that.
But there's also a repeated gag here because Daffy's plan is get Speedy to the table, have it then net him, which...
Yeah.
Okay, this is really a nitpick. If you're going to capture a mouse, why have a big net? He's a mouse. Get like a...
Maybe the mouse likes basketball.
Not yet. Not yet.
We're not being racist, and not yet.
Though, if you wait long enough, you will.
Oh, yeah. If you're good, we'll do Space Jam. If you're good.
All right. So, anyways, so he gets netted, and once again, Speedy runs really fast and lazily at me. We cut to the back of the house, and it's just Daffy being moved across the both ends of the house. It's not great animation.
This doesn't work as well because we can't get laughs out of all the furniture that's being displaced because we can't see which ones because it's going too quickly. Like, Sylvester on the last one, you at least saw him get dragged into cacti or through a tube or whatever. Here, you can't see what's hitting Daffy or if he's having any effect by it. It's just stuff in the background. Statically, it doesn't work as well. And then the glue bit is a wee bit simple. Where it's just, you know, it's very talky, this bit. And it's, you know, some glue. Is this another one where Speedy scares Daffy? I forget.
It is. So the glue set up. Speedy comes behind him. Yells. Daffy jumps up. He has a paintbrush of glue on him. So he sticks to the wall. He talks some more. He falls off, lands on the ground, and covered in the glue, so he's stuck. And then Speedy yells again, which I did like that because Daffy's already glued to the ground, when he gets jolted up, it's just his body that jumps up as his feathers stay glued on the ground. I like that.
That was at least good.
It was different. It was a different take off of...
Yes.
But then, that gag concludes, and we get the same animation of Daffy with the book.
Yep.
Bad feeling. We have the money to work with some Warner Brothers talent and pay Mel Blanc to come in, but for some reason we
but not enough to try.
Yes, exactly. You're not UPA, or whatever no. Anyways.
So there's more gags after this, but I none of them are very good.
Oh yeah, the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, the vacuum one that didn't that was a bit overlong. And there was some physics shit that got in my way. Because, again, we do another reuse gag and get Speedy being chased off the diving board. And then it ends up not being different because, Daffy goes into the pool with the vacuum cleaner. And then it starts sucking up all the water.
Also,
and
just in animation, so when Daffy is on the diving board, there's animation of him going onto the diving board, and then the Daffy model is like paused, as like it's kind of like moved across the diving board background as a sound effect plays. Like, too much to just animate Daffy Duck sliding across a diving board. Really?
Yeah, too much work.
Too much work? Yeah, but then he sucks up all the water, and then we get a plugging up the holes little gag here.
But by the time he crashes down into the base of the empty pool, where's the water? It can't still be all in the vacuum. The vacuum is about to burst. Where's the gag of the water coming down on him after he's already crashed into the pool? Is that too much to animate? Because that's what physically happens next. You know, if this was rationally animated or rationally directed, John Dunn or whatever, I'm getting angry. I'm getting angry over a fucking Speedy Gonzales cartoon.
So then our last gag here, it's Daffy decides he's going to use technology. He has
technology.
Exactly. Well, that didn't work. So can we just watch that instead of this?
Wish we could.
Can please just watch.
Wet Painters is at least a good cartoon, which I can't say about this. Just hanging around?
Boo!
No, Patrick! No, Patrick!
Patrick!
You want some? Okay, I panic. I can quote that entire thing.
Oh my god.
So, the last gag. We're ridiculous today. All right. So last gag, tap technology, and he puts a picture of a mouse in the machine. The machine will automatically dispose the thing it's supposed to dispose of. So of course, he puts a picture of the mouse in, and we get this prolonged scene of Speedy and the machine being chased around a chair. While this is going on, you can see an image of Daffy Duck. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen.
And they just keep making it very obvious when going around and around and drawing it out.
And not that continuity means shit in a cartoon like this, but so Speedy Gonzales, he jumps on the chair, he takes out a Daffy Duck comic book. Wait a minute. Okay. What is up with these late 60s cartoons and just having no logical sense? Okay.
Yeah.
The last time we had Daffy Duck in comic books, it was in a book review. And that one, the Looney Tunes comic book was there to get Daffy Duck into the short proper. It made sense. And this one, Daffy Duck is already here.
Yeah.
He's not playing Daffy. Okay, maybe he's playing Daffy Duck as a person, but he doesn't introduce himself as Daffy Duck. He introduces himself as the the business that was called upon.
Yeah. He already exists in universe. He doesn't need another Daffy Duck.
Exactly. He already exists in universe. So there's just a comic book of himself lying around? So in this universe, he created a comic book about himself?
There's the gag that people have had online where they say, I wonder if Nick Fury's ever seen, because they say, because Star Wars does exist in the MCU. So I wonder if Nick Fury's ever went and watched the prequels of Star Wars and gone,
Exactly. Well, like in Endgame, Tony Stark mentions the Big Lebowski. Like, wait a minute.
You worked with fucking the dude.
you worked with the dude. He was your bad guy. Like, did he ever watch the Big Lebowski, like, after the events of Iron Man 1 and went, wait a minute. Wait.
Although, to be fair, Obadiah Stane in Iron Man looks a lot different from Jeff Lebowski in Big Lebowski. So,
true.
Honestly, it's a different characterization, so I would get why he wouldn't do that. But Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury doesn't look too different from Samuel Jackson as Mace Windu. And to that logic, Daffy Duck on the comic book doesn't look too different than Daffy Duck in this character. So,
yeah.
But it's still shitty.
and listen, in any other short, you could argue it's just a cute meta gag.
Mm-hmm.
But it's integral to the story that a Daffy Duck image is here. Anyways, so Speedy takes the Daffy Duck comic book, puts it into the machine. The machine chases after Daffy Duck and is like, no, you stupid machine, that's not supposed to work. And we end it so fucking lazily. Which is hard cut to Speedy Gonzalez saying, it's nice to have a mouse around the house.
Roll credits! Not good. Not good.
I'm not going to be too harsh on this because it did have some gags that made me laugh.
Yes, it did.
But for the most part, the pacing and story, it just goes through the paces and doesn't really do anything for me.
Right.
It's like, it feels like a story that was just hastily put together in order to get a short made. Like, it was pulling out a quota. And that's the funny thing. A lot of Looney Tunes cartoons were filling out quotas, each director. You have to do, like, 3 Bugs Bunnies a year or whatever. These were all quotas.
But in the Golden Age, they would try.
Exactly. They would try. And they would succeed. This, they wouldn't.
Like, yeah, there were a few alright gags in this. But a few too many of the same shots, the same jokes from previous Speedy ones, an abrupt ending, and the failure of the Speedy, Sylvester, and Daffy concept by writing out Sylvester before he could even be of use to Daffy. It was also badly animated, cheaply animated. There wasn't a very good granny voice. And so much of this just did not work at all. And it was basically the harbinger of several more disappointing Daffy and Speedy cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I wish I could go back and tell 11 or whatever year old me that it wouldn't be worth it to eventually find it's nice to have a mouse around the house.
So if you want to watch this cartoon, it's not on HBO Max or anything, it's on DVD. On the Looney Tunes Mouse Chronicles, it came out in 2012. It's essentially a Hubie and Birdie and Sniffles collection. There's some bonus cartoons on one of the discs, and it has It's Nice to Have a Mouse Around the House.
Yeah.
It also has Merlin the. They put some fucking stinkers as like bonus material.
Yeah, it's a bonus. Yeah.
Bonus, yeah. Have a sh- have this shit. I'm giving this an animal rating of a 2.5 out of 5 animals.
That's exactly what I'm giving it. This was not a good assortment this week. But hey, we got through.
It was Speedy Gonzalez. I will say, I think I went into this one with slightly higher expectations than I did with Hippity Hopper.
Yes.
And with that, it kind of made my expectations a little more positively than Hippity Hopper. But even still,
Well, I guess we're going to find out if there are any Speedy Gonzalez apologists that follow the podcast.
Yeah.
All right. First up, frequent commenter at Guido95, Fox Nafissa, says, great choices. Pied Piper is one of the better Speedies, and Mouse Around the House is probably the worst. Couldn't agree more with you there, my friend. The short Speedy Gonzalez, I think, is a very predictable short, but notable because it's the first true Speedy cartoon. The ones you picked are all directed by Frizz. I do think McKimson did the Speedy cartoons better, but that's for another episode. I think he did all the main characters after this episode, right?
Not quite.
There's a few tiny character-based ones we still need to do.
One of them is actually tiny. Yes.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Our friend here brings up an interesting point, which is, will we cover any of the McKimson Speedy Gonzalez cartoons? Because the argument here is that those ones are better. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I never really thought about that because, the lore is that McKimson did, Cattails for Two. He did the... the prototype Speedy, and then Frizz kind of took Speedy and ran with him, and then McKimson got Speedy back. I don't know. That would certainly be an interesting counterpoint to this week's episode. So,
yeah,
perhaps.
No, it's something worth thinking about, and we don't think too highly on Speedy Gonzalez cartoons in general because of just the racist aspect of it. But it's worth it to consider also doing some McKimson ones because you never know if we'll find any gold in there. Hopefully not in his teeth. Jesus Christ. But yeah, no. Thank you for calling in, Fox Nafissa. There is one other one, right?
Yes, there is. This is from Frequent. Getting the word out about the podcast, Spiderus Prime 2 at Spiderus. They actually gave their comment in Spanish and English.
Yeah, no, at least I translated it, so, it's all good. And but,
Well, they also translate down here. So, Spiderus said that Speedy Gonzalez's debut cartoon is very funny and a perfect way to introduce the Fast Mouse on Mexico. And have him pin against Sylvester the Cat, then later Daffy Duck.
Yeah,
I mean, it is a good debut cartoon. Like,
it
you,
is.
You know the character completely in Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah. It's just, again, there are problematic elements that keep me from completely enjoying it. Because he's a one-note character that doesn't stand for the best value judgments in Mexicans. And I think that while it's a very funny cartoon in parts, a lot of the morals of animators are sacrificed.
Yeah.
It was better than the Nice Stuff and Mouse Around the House. So.
Oh my god, yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry for putting you through that work.
It's alright. Alright, so thanks for your comments.
Yes. No, hopefully we did your stuff justice. And vice versa.
By the way, there actually is a community of people who, support Speedy Gonzalez.
Ah, racists.
I remember that being the thing where, Cartoon Network did Speedy Gonzalez cartoons off their block, and then, a bunch of, Mexican advocacy groups were like, no, we actually like Speedy Gonzalez because he's a positive representation.
He's... No, he's not.
Well, he doesn't, I mean, he only steals to support, like, he doesn't do anything bad as a Mexican, I guess.
It's iffy. It's very iffy.
The stealing cheese from a factory, it's kind of iffy.
That's good. I'm fine with that. But just his attitude and his sort of way of speaking, I think, are problematic.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's Mel Blanc.
Which, I mean, there is a reason, but I do think there is a good reason why, because I know in the Looney Tunes show, that was like the first, like, big come from Pia Gonzalez, and he was voiced by Fred Armisen.
And he did well, yeah. I'm tempted to say that Gabriel Iglesias is going to be voicing him for Space Jam 2.
Yes, in Space Jam, yes.
Which is a good choice.
Which is good. I haven't seen Speedy in any marketing material, so.
No.
Like, I don't know how big of a role he has in the movie itself.
There's probably going to be a line or two that's going to reference the fact that he used to be very problematic, and because Gabriel Iglesias is saying these lines, people will laugh.
It's going to be funny.
Look, I'm actually not really a hater of Gabriel Iglesias. I think he's very funny. I think he does sort of cater to the louder Comedy Central type of comedy, but...
Okay. So, as you said earlier, Jordan, we're nearing 50 episodes. In fact, next week is going to be episode 50.
Isn't that something?
Yay! Yeah. That's a lot. Okay.
We've been doing this for a year. What'd you expect?
I think we've covered... Is it 9 episodes of 2 episodes?
18.
We have to be nearing 100 shorts covered.
Yeah, I gotta be somewhere around there.
Somewhere near there. Which means the next week's episode is a movie. And what movie are we covering?
We have finally gotten to the end of the original run of short bridging, Freeling sort of led Warner Brothers movies. And we've done 3 that were mostly done by Friz Freeling's company. And with this last one, Looney Tunes begins to get handed back to the people that grew up with it. And this is a lot of lasts for this company. And it's also a last for Mel Blanc. This is the last Looney project that Mel Blanc would be a part of. And it's a very interesting movie to talk about for a number of reasons, especially pertaining to previous Looney movies. But it's a movie called Daffy Duck's Quackbusters, which is released in 1988. I don't know about you, Mark, but I think of the Freeling / Looney movies of the 70s and 80s, I think this one was played among the most frequently.
Oh, yes.
So I've seen this several times.
Yes, and for me, it's always like certain sections of them.
Yeah.
Like, I'd always catch the beginning or the end a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I know the end of this movie very well.
You wish!
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about, because we also have to bring up the sort of new era of Daffy Duck shorts that was beginning to sort of start in this era. And we have to bring up Greg Ford, and we have to bring up a lot of the different players that would make Quackbusters,
yes,
for better, for worse, what it was. And
yes, and it's the work, well, it doesn't seem like it. It's this collection of people that we would really get the rejuvenation of Looney Tunes in the 90s. It's really a combination of Quackbusters' release and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Those are the two that really kicked them off into the 90s. And,
yes, and yeah. There is a lot to talk about with this movie, and I'm very excited to get to it next week.
Oh, yes.
And then, you know, it also opens the doors for a lot of other very interesting Looney-related movies to talk about in other multiple of 10 episodes, which we'll be getting to afterward. But Quackbusters is a big one, and I'm very excited to see if it holds up or not. It probably won't, but it's very exciting anyway.
You know what? It'll probably be more interesting.
Yes.
Because the thing about the Fantastic Island, it wasn't interesting.
No.
You know, it was just there. At least with Quackbusters, there's an effort. There's, hey, let's go in this direction. And let's, like...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that'll be cool. And, you know, hopefully you'll enjoy this next week. I hope I'll enjoy it next week because it's... The movie episodes are always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. So, that is the end of this week's show. If you'd like to keep up with us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at Tolga Schmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow at that_Looney or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find this podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. It includes your Apple Podcasts, your Google Podcasts, your Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Anchor, any of those and more. We are still out there waiting for you.
All right, so until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And we've made it through without being too racist, I hope.
Arriba!
On delay.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Yes. Yeah.